time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June. I said that's life.
Frank Sinatra, everybody. A little track called That's Life. Joining me in the studio for our weekly rendition of Consider This Live are Mary Robertson. She is the chair of the Greater Bay of Quinte CARP, Canadian Association of Retired Persons, and Louise Ware. She is the vice chair. And joining me as well in the studio, my regular co-host for Wednesdays, Rob Washburn. He is the professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. Folks, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very glad to have you ladies here. I might have to move your microphone around while you guys are talking. The ladies are sharing a mic tonight, folks. That's how that's working. So welcome to the show. I guess we should introduce each of you first and maybe give us a little background on how you got involved with CARP. We'll start with you, Mary. You're the chair, so you've probably been involved a little longer maybe then, right?
No, we actually started together, Louise and I. And I guess in my financial planning practice, I was looking around for different things and volunteer work and came across CARP, and it just fit. And I have a mother who's going to be 101 on November the 6th.
Wow.
And so when you have someone of that age in your family, you really learn about the healthcare system and the challenges that that offers. And so it's become a passion. So we started the chapter in 2011. Here, and we cover Brighton, Belleville, Quinte West, and the county.
Wow, so that's quite a huge area. Now, what about you, Louise? How did you get started with CARP?
Well, I've always had a keen interest in advocacy work, and in my youth, I suppose, I got involved with many things, and I sort of, once I retired and hung up my shingle from my professional career, I thought, you know, I really want to be involved in something that's meaningful and something that gives back to the community. And when I saw that a CARP chapter was being formed in the area, I went out to the very first evening and said, yeah, I'm in.
Excellent.
And we've been working together, Mary and myself, ever since.
Well, it's called the Canadian Association of Retired Persons, but not every member is a retired person. Is that correct?
Oh, no, for sure.
No, I said I was talking to you earlier. You said there's one chapter president, I guess, who is a young person like in his late 20s, right?
Yeah, there's a CARP chair who is 25 years old. And it used to be that it was for retired people, but now it's more of an advocacy group for different reforms for healthcare and financial security and things like that. If you're not a senior yourself, then you probably have a senior in your life. So
right.
That's why people of all ages are invited to participate with CARP.
Right. So I understand, Dave, that there are 60 chapters across Canada, 300,000 members, and the average age for membership is 68. Is that correct?
Could be about right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds right, Rob.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Dave. I looked it up.
I know. I knew you would. I always count on Rob to do the research, folks. I'm not the most research-oriented. I like to just get involved in really good conversation. That's why I do what I do here every week. So, Rob, why don't you kick it off with
Well,
with
maybe we could talk a bit about the organization and what sorts of things that you guys do in the Greater Bay of Quinte chapter. Give us some idea of the types of events you do and the things that you're involved in.
Well, we try and put on events for our members. Louise is the vice chair, but she's also the chair of rights and health. And so she has, I'll let her speak to that, actually, if you want to speak to what you've put on for the members since we started.
Yes, I'm chair of the Health and Rights Advocacy Committee, and we put on events for our community, information and educational events, to give our seniors, or anybody actually wants to come in and sort of find out what's new and what's happening, things that are of interest in the area. We did a senior driver guide when there were changes in the Ontario government where they were going to change the testing for seniors. We put on an event to help seniors understand how that actually works. We had over 100 people turn out to that event. We did an event with Listen Up to talk about hearing issues.
Alzheimer's.
And we had a wonderful couple who were, the gentleman was in the early stages of Alzheimer's, to come in and talk about what their journey is like, what they would have done differently in terms of sharing the information with their family. And there were aha moments all the way through. And these are the types of things that we like to bring to the community so that mm-hmm. they can really become informed. We do some mm-hmm. social events, barbecues and such like that. Certainly a big piece of what we're doing this year, just in general, is the All Candidates Debate, so that seniors can come out and actually have the opportunity to have hear their candidates talk about things that are of interest to them.
Now, I understand you've had a debate in the Northumberland Peterborough South riding. Could you tell us when that took place and what happened?
That was on September 17th, and it was at the King Edward Community Centre in Brighton. And we had Kim Rudd from the Liberal Party, Russ Christensen from the NDP, and Patricia Sinnott from the Green Party. Adam Moulton declined to attend. We had a large turnout, and we had a lot of coverage from the press as well. And the questions, we had pre-selected questions for the candidates that weren't given to them. So, but we had pre-selected questions. So we steered the debate for the first part of it. And then the second part of the debate, we opened it up to the floor where people could come up to the microphone and ask their questions. And people were so engaged. It was really amazing. The candidates were fabulous. And what happened was we ran out of time, really. And so I was trying to, we had people lined up at the mic. And so I went to try and stop it. And the candidate said, well, you know, rather than do our closing remarks, we'll just take more questions. So they were very gracious that way. And we ended up ending right on time. And it was, people learned a lot. It was mm-hmm. really, really quite good.
Now, what sort of questions were we hearing? Were there particular themes that were common, or can you give us an idea?
There was, healthcare was a huge issue. With the federal government stopping the health accord with the provinces years and years ago, it's just mm-hmm. meant a lot of frustration and confusion with the healthcare system in all the provinces. End of life with the Supreme Court decision to allow physician-assisted death was also one of the topics.
How's that playing with CARP members? The idea that that's something that is now an option, I guess, or something that's...
They're fair.
Are people looking at it as a realistic option?
Yeah, absolutely. And it really should have been there a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Another is financial, like the old age security being changed from 65 to 67. People would like to see that changed mm-hmm. back. The enhancement of retirement income. Because a lot of the seniors today... are living in poverty. A lot of them are women. Mm-hmm. So the ones that didn't work outside of the home, looked after the children, didn't develop a pension, didn't even contribute to Canada pension. So what do they have to live on?
Well, and that's a really good question. What kind of responses were you getting to that particular question? I mean, was there genuine feeling that this was something that needs to be addressed, or were you getting a lot of lip service? Because that tends to be what happens during campaigns, right?
I think universally it was taking it back to 65. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone decided that 67 was a good thing to do. As far as the enhancement of the CPP, I suspected a bit of lip service there.
Mm-hmm. Well, because we know that people who don't have CPP benefits, and I mean, they end up on social assistance, right?
Yep.
They end up on welfare, or Ontario Works, as it's called now here in Ontario. Are you still obliged to try and find a job at that age? Well, I know, because in Ontario it works. That's how it works, right?
Well, in
you've
reality,
got to be ready and willing to find a job. It's almost like employment insurance, but only less.
Yeah. But in reality, one of the things that CARP does is advocate for senior workers,
mm-hmm.
right, to promote that. But in reality, that doesn't happen.
Right.
But we also have a lot of youth unemployed, too. We've got a lot of seniors who are delaying retirement, so that's just like a conundrum.
Right. Yeah. And again, a lot of seniors now are spending their retirement income supporting their families,
yep.
right? I mean, supporting their kids mm-hmm. who are supporting their kids.
Yep.
You know, you see those commercials on TV. Oh, I just want to put a little away for my retirement and have a little something to leave the kids to go to college. And it sounds like a wonderful commercial, but how realistic is that for a lot of people out there?
It's not.
Right.
Yeah. It's not. And again, it's that is a huge issue. Retirement income security is a huge issue.
So when I was looking at what CARP is advocating for during this election, one of the things that I came across was, besides restoring the old age security to 65 from 67, was also an increase in the exempt earnings for guaranteed income supplement. Could you explain what that is and why that's important, and also why you're looking for increases to old age security and the guaranteed income supplement for low-income seniors?
Well, mainly to help low-income seniors, because they, I mean, let's face it, the defined benefit pension plans that people long ago were used to, they're not in existence anymore, really.
Mm-hmm.
But to raise the, you can earn, I think it's $3,500 income without having to declare it. That would lower your GIS, your guaranteed income supplement.
And that's in a year, though, right?
Yes.
$3,500 in a year.
In a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want the listeners to realize that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some people think, well, $3,500, it doesn't sound like much money. But if it's got to last you a year.
Yeah.
And anything over that gets clawed back, right?
Well, no. Yes, it does. So, yeah. So the GIS, so the income qualification level is quite low,
mm-hmm.
and it needs to be increased, really, because there's too many people just not there. They're just not there.
Can you give us a number just to maybe illustrate how low it is? So if I was living on old age security and a guaranteed income supplement, how much would I be bringing in to my household if I was a senior?
Well, the maximum old age security is about $540 a month, and the maximum GIS for a single person is around $790.
Does that number diminish if you're a couple? If you're still living
yes.
with your spouse,
yeah,
you don't actually get $700 a person. You get less, significantly
it's,
less.
Yeah, it takes into the family income.
Right.
So you're looking at about $1,330 a month to live
it's
on.
Way below the poverty line. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's, well, you know, if you're a senior and that's your only form of income, that's pretty desperate straits.
Yeah. As I said, like a lot of women are in that category
mm-hmm.
because they didn't have the opportunity to contribute to the Canada Pension Plan or work to even develop any kind of savings,
mm-hmm.
really.
Wow. So what is the number one issue for CARP right now during this election? Is it income insecurity?
It's everything. It's the healthcare, end of life. There's PharmaCare wanting to develop a PharmaCare program. Elder abuse.
Well, that's my phone going off, folks. Go figure, eh? Okay.
Back to reality.
I think what's happening in that, say, for healthcare, for example, there's a huge push to get people out of the hospitals as quickly as possible,
mm-hmm.
right? You've seen on television about the cab driver dropping this person off at their home and just leaving them.
Yep.
And they had no way of A, getting into their home, and B, nobody knew they were home. And so the problem is that you have this push to get people out of the hospital, and most people want to get out of the hospital. Like, they
mm-hmm.
really don't want to stay there. I can attest to that for sure. But you need to have the care to be able to go home, too.
Right. Well, there, you mentioned that case there, and I believe there was a case, was it last year, where the gentleman basically died on his front doorstep?
Yeah. And my mother, let's just for example, like I said, she was 101. You know, she gets 15 PSW hours a week. So 15 PSW hours would equate to getting you up in the morning and putting you to bed at night.
Mm-hmm.
So that does not, I guess you don't have to go to the bathroom during the day or eat lunch or, you know. So anything else above and beyond that, you have to find out for yourself and take care of
yourself. Find some way of paying for it, or, or maybe there's a volunteer organization in your community that might be able to help you that way. But for the most part, that just doesn't exist, right?
Right.
Okay. So again, folks, I just want to remind the listeners, we are discussing CARP. And with me today are the chair and vice chair of the Greater Bay of Quinte, CARP, Canadian Association of Retired Persons. My guests in the studio are Mary Robertson. She's the chair, and Louise War. She is the vice chair. We're going to take our first break of the show, and when we come right back, we're going to talk a little bit more about CARP and about the election this year, because, again, you know, seniors, I was talking to somebody earlier, and they said, you know, all we ever talk about the government is what about seniors? What about young people? What about young people trying to get into the workforce? Well, you know, today we're discussing seniors because I think a lot of people aren't aware of just how dire the situation is for a lot of folks out there, especially folks who are supposed to be in the best years of their lives, right? At the end there, when the kids are all grown up and out and you've got the grandkids coming over. Anyway, we're going to carry on the conversation right after the break, so please stick around. And welcome back to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. I'm Dave Glover. This is Canada's only holistic political talk show, folks. So we're talking about CARP, the Canadian Association of Retired Persons. Joining me in the studio are the chair and vice chair of the Bay of Quinte, the greater Bay of Quinte area. And you guys service quite a huge area as well, from Bay of Quinte, Belleville, Brighton, Coburg, and areas out here as well. So huge. And you must be busy. Now, one of the things you alluded to just before the break was the was elder abuse. And today, you know, the main topic of our show today, for myself anyway, has been this really heinous crime that happened just northwest of Ottawa. Three women were murdered. And, I mean, this guy was in his 50s. One of the victims, I understand, was in her 60s. So, I mean, this falls right into that into that conversation.
Well, I think when it comes to elder abuse, when we think about that, typically, you think of the seniors and the emotional and the financial abuse. But, I mean, abuse is domestic violence in whatever situation it is. And as an older person ages, there are certain things that are going to happen to them. They may lose a little bit of their faculties. They may just be a little bit weaker than the other person. And I think the thing is that, you know, that's something that CARP actively advocates against, that everybody has a right to, you know, a proper life free of those kinds of stresses. There's social isolation. There's the financial event, the fraud and everything that goes on with elders. And I think that CARP advocates to champion that these things have got to stop, to draw them to the attention to the fore, and that these things have to stop. And that, you know, it's all about human kindness.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you expect then when you're going to candidates and talking to candidates about policies and what possibly can be done? What would you ask a candidate for, or what would be you look something for the government to do?
Well, I think in many cases it's a question of raising the awareness that the issue is there and that it's serious. You know, it's very hard. It's like a triage of things that you're going to deal with, and it's hard to get it to the forefront if enough people don't talk about it. And I think that we speak to our candidates that, you know, to raise those issues. And what CARP does is where we have our top 10 advocacy points that, you know, it's just to raise the awareness of the issues and get them on the radar. There's so many things that aren't on the radar. So if we were going to approach the candidates and we'd sort of say, first off, that it exists and accept that it exists.
What happens, too, is that CARP puts a lot of educational seminars on. So sometimes elders don't even recognize that they're being abused.
Yeah.
But are things in terms of policy or government funding that are needed to be put in place to enhance the work that you're already doing?
What can the government do? That's a good question. So what can the government do in a situation like this other than holding awareness seminars and things like that? Are there things that CARP is advocating?
Well, they could increase the penalties and fines that are attached to somebody who commits elder abuse,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that is one of the issues that they are looking at doing, and that is one of the ways that they can advocate to try and stem elder abuse. If you've got a stiffer penalty, then that might make you think twice.
It's part of the problem, though, a lack of information. I mean, we know this government got rid of the long-form census, and one of the things the long-form census did, even though people didn't realize it, was to be able to provide us accurate and valid numbers in terms of population, age of population, social structure of the population, the demographics. All of that is now missing. And I mean, it's got to be difficult for an organization like CARP, for instance, to talk about specific numbers when even those numbers can, for the most part, be flawed.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I have a map of I do a presentation for about our chapter, and I have a map of Southern Ontario, and it highlights the pockets of population as to where most of the seniors live.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's it's like an actuarial, so it's not how accurate is it, but it does represent. We have 35% of the population of seniors here in this area.
Really?
Huge. And the reason is because it's a more temperate climate, really, mm-hmm. than you get up north or Ottawa, and people are getting out of Toronto and getting out of Montreal, and they're all coming here. It's great.
One of the things that I always find stunning is that, well, it's about 35% in the Bay of Quinte area. Down in Cobourg and Port Hope, it is as high as 45 to 50%.
Wow.
So, I mean, it is a very senior populated area. How does that affect then this election in terms of voters and how seniors vote?
It's interesting because seniors do vote. They absolutely take their voting privileges seriously and they take the time to go out and vote. 75% of seniors vote versus 41% of 19 to 44 year olds that vote. So it's mind boggling to me why a politician or a political candidate wouldn't come out to speak to a seniors group. Mind-boggling to me.
Well, especially, you know, and I'm going to point to Adam Moulton on this particular case because he's the one who's not showing up. And here's a guy who's in his mid-20s,
mm-hmm.
okay? He's, for all intents and purposes, has, other than his education, really no life experience. And he wants to represent this riding. And as we've just indicated, there's an overwhelming majority of people in this riding, I would have to say the majority of people in this riding, are of retirement age or elder or senior or whatever the phrase they're going to use this mm-hmm. week. And, I mean, other than hanging out with his grandparents, which we can only assume he did as a kid, that really is the extent of his exposure. And how does a guy with virtually no experience represent a group of people that he has no knowledge of? Is that a concern? Are you hearing about that from CARP members as well in the riding? And because I know I know you're a nonpartisan organization, and I don't want to pin you down that way. But surely that's a conversation that's being had. Within the Bay of Quinte.
Oh, absolutely. I think that for all three of our debates that we're having, the Conservative Party has declined all three. Now, as a voter, you know, I find that, just from a democratic process point of view, I find that very disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to show up to your point, to a demographic that consistently votes, takes their franchise very seriously, and really cares about what their candidates have to say. And I it was jaw-dropping for me. And I just thought, from a democratic process point of view, I was really profoundly disappointed.
Are you attending tonight's debate in Port Hope? Apparently all four of them are going to be there tonight. Are you guys, is anyone from CARP that you know going there?
No. We've been up to our eyeballs with our own area putting on the debates.
Right.
And I don't know. I was told that the reason Conservative Party would come is if they had the questions given to them ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's been the case so far, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been really interesting, too, because CARP did their own set of surveys of their membership to find out how they vote. And what they found was is that 45% of CARP across the country vote for Liberals, 38% vote for Conservatives, and 13% vote for NDP. And this was consistently found over multiple surveys that CARP did. What's fascinating, too, is they had a huge response to this. 4,000 people responded. With that statistically, I mean, that's incredible when you think about it. Because I think when we think of seniors, mm-hmm. we often think that they are small-c conservative, therefore they might vote conservative, but that's not the case. And they also found out too, and I found this really, really interesting, is that seniors don't vote the same throughout their entire lives. We always say, well, seniors, you know, if they voted conservative when they were younger, when they're older, they vote conservative. That, in fact, is not the case. They found that the opposite's the case, that they do change their vote. Their vote is fluid and that a party can't count on them. So I think that's, you know, when you think about it, then I wouldn't be feeling too cocky if I was a candidate to, you know, for this group to be coming out and going to support me, you know?
Well, a lot of the people that I spoke to your point, they actually, some of them were card-carrying conservatives or card-carrying liberals or whatever, but they are taking this election very seriously. And they are wanting to listen to what all the candidates. I had a fellow the other day say, gosh, he says, I was definitely going to vote Liberal, but that NDP guy really had a lot of good things to say. Mm-hmm. So it's important to go out to the debates. It's important for the candidates to be out there because that could be the voter turning point.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I also think, too, it's interesting for a majority of the nation. Jobs and the economy are critical pieces in the puzzle. But we've talked about here is economics for one, certainly. But I know that healthcare is a really, really big issue for CARP. And you started to talk about quality of care and the seamless nature of care. But another thing that I found when I was looking at what your organization does is pharmacare. The importance of pharmacare. And I wonder if you could talk about that because it's been in the news lately. We've had guests on our show that have talked about this. Mm-hmm. Could you talk from your perspective about how important pharmacare is for the group you represent?
Well, it's just that so many of our members can't afford the drugs that they need. And they need to be able to have the health care that they actually deserve. And it would be less costly for health care to have a pharmacare program in place, really.
Well, one of the things we've discussed on this show in the past, and we're having a little mic issues, folks, because we don't have enough mics, but we've talked about the fact that, you know, in the long term, it would actually save both public health care and the federal government, provincial governments, billions of dollars a year, because what we're talking about is keeping people healthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you can't afford the medication, even if you've got a prescription, I mean, I've said this to my own doctor, you know, well, I can give you a prescription, but I mean, that's great. I can put that on the fridge and that will be where it sits because I don't have any coverage. And I know so many people out there are working right now, struggling, that don't have any coverage. It's not something that's commonplace anymore. You know, 25, 30 years ago, yeah, you got a job. Generally, you would get benefits. That's not the case now, and especially for older workers, because now you're to the point where a lot of companies that do have plans in place, for instance, once you reach a certain age, they don't want to extend that coverage to you anymore.
We, I mean, in the business that I do, one of the things that people will look at is their own private health plan, because to your point, there isn't that anymore really in a lot of places, but the cost is prohibitive. It's just prohibitive. And so people are making decisions, okay, so if I don't take the dental and I just do the drugs, or I need the dental, so I'll have to forego the drugs, right? So they're making these decisions, and it's just going to affect it. And Louise, she's been advocating for oral health care, which is non-existent. Right. So you want to speak to that?
Yeah, affordable oral health care for seniors. There are a lot of programs in the province right now that the working, you know, Ontario Works program, the SMILE program under 17 and children as well, but there's nothing for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So again, they do that sort of same triage. And dental is so expensive that seniors are just sort of saying, well, you know, we can't afford it. I'm going to pay this, I'm going to pay that. So again, they do that sort of triage thing and they just leave the dental out. There are statistics in 2013 in the hospitals, ER rooms in Ontario, that 28% of seniors between the ages of 50 and 90, 28% in 2013 went to the ER for oral health issues. Now that doesn't solve their problem. All that gives them is antibiotics, but doesn't solve the problem. And another 3% will return for exactly the same problem.
Well, and then the issue becomes even the emergency care that's available to people who are on Ontario Works, for instance. You can't get bridge work done. They'll pull teeth.
Yeah,
yeah.
But exactly. they're not going to provide you with, you know, any kind of prosthetic, any kind of false teeth or whatever you want to call it. And that, I mean, you know, there's a whole demographic right now in this province of what I refer to as working poor folk who are working full-time, 40 hours a week in some cases, sometimes more, up to 70 hours a week, working two jobs. And they don't have any coverage at all.
Yep. Yep.
None whatsoever. So,
and of course, the byproduct of all of this with the lack of good oral health care, of course, mm-hmm. there's a lot of science that supports that once that bacteria and that infection gets
heart
into your
disease.
System through your mouth, it goes right through.
Yeah.
And then not only can you not afford it, you're going to be in pain. And then socially, you're going to become more isolated because as your teeth fall out or they rot, you don't want to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens then? Then there becomes the whole social aspect of, you know, it's wrong. It's wrong in this country. And I think a lot of looking at where's the Tommy Douglas for oral health care?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and why wasn't that part of...
Well, it was part of the original plan.
Yeah.
The original plan for universal care in this country was a universal
yep.
care plan that included dental care, that included pharma care, that included universal access to health care. And it was watered down. It was watered down by the negotiations during the parliamentary process. I know that the NDP with Tommy Douglas were pushing for full-on universal care. And I know that Paul Martin Sr. was like, well, we can't really afford it. And, you know, but we can afford to do this right now. Maybe we'll introduce this later. And it's always been something that was, well, maybe we'll introduce it later. And we've had successive governments now that have felt that tax cuts was the way to best supply Canadians with what they needed to do. Canadians don't want big government. Well, in order to get these types of services, you need to have big government. Whether you like it or not, that's the reality. So we really need to think, I think, not so just for seniors, but for all Canadians, particularly for seniors, though. And it's kind of ironic because, for the most part, there's a large cohort of seniors who've, through the 70s and 80s, who were saying, no, we don't have the financial wherewithal to do this, because it's like young people, even today, nobody plans for their future. Nobody thinks down the road, this is going to be a problem for me. Oh, I'm going to have a set retirement. But now they've reached this point, 35, 40 years later, when all of these discussions were happening, has there been sort of this eye-opening, this epiphany among seniors, you think, in Canada, where they realized we really should have done this?
Well, I think that... part of what led us to that situation where people should have had that aha moment a while ago in mm-hmm. terms of their benefits and their retirement benefits was what changed so dramatically in the workplace over the last 20 years with businesses going more part-time, going more contract work and all of that. They were sort of downsizing to reduce their own overhead and increase mm-hmm. their own break-even or their profitability. So a lot of those boomers got caught in that sort of vortex of what happened. And then as you retire... you're looking towards your retirement 20 years down the road. All of a sudden, you don't have the same benefit plans that people 20 years before you had. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but it was 20 years. All of a sudden, the bell rang, and people sort of said, oh, now what?
And that 20 years went by pretty quick.
It does.
It
goes by in a heartbeat, especially when you're in the middle of raising your family. You're at that point mm-hmm. where your expenses are going to be high. You're not going to have the benefit and the pension that you thought you would have because the workplace changed so dramatically. So yeah, that was – they got caught.
Well, we were talking about retirement savings, the affordability, the people retiring into poverty. And one of the other things that this government has said for years, and even with the introduction of 401ks in the U.S., is that they want to let workers decide where they should save their money. They want workers to control their retirement, so they are in control. Because as this government likes to say, Canadians know best how to spend their money. But if you're not a financial advisor, like... Just for everyone's notice, that Mary here, Mary Robertson, is a personal financial advisor. And so you can attest probably just through personal experience the difference between having a plan and working with someone to put a plan together and having no idea what you're doing and just still trying to muddle your way through, which is what the governments are saying they want us to be able to do.
And people, first of all, they don't have the time. Really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's face it, if you're a young family and you've got kids and they're in sports and they're going to school and you're working 40, 50 hours a week, they get home and they're just exhausted, right? So somebody who works with a financial advisor who lets them do that job for them to help them with the budgeting process, to help them direct where their money should go,
mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people don't know actually where their money goes. And it's called the latte factor. So they've got some cash in their pocket and they go to Starbucks and spend $4.50 a day on a cup of coffee. That's $25 a week. That's $100 a month. That's $1,200 a year. Gone.
Mm-hmm.
To coffee. Right? So people who work with an advisor are a lot more successful in planning for their retirement and their retirement income. And oftentimes I've sat with people, gone through their cash flow and their net worth, and they said, boy, I wish I'd spoke to you 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really?
Is that a service that CARP provides to seniors? Though? Is there a group within CARP, volunteers, what have you, that show people how to get on their a financial footing?
No, not really. But they talk about it. So really it's more raising the awareness, and they do direct people to places where they can get advice. It's not something that they individually do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the things I'd like to note is about local issues. One of the things we've seen, especially in your area, is the hospitals have been dramatically affected in terms of level of service. I'm sorry to keep going back to healthcare, but it's just such an important piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And I know there's been big changes at Quinte Healthcare Center, Trenton Memorial Hospital, Picton.
Campbellford.
What is CARP doing around those issues on a local level?
On a local level, we're not really involved in that particular file on a local level. But I will say that I attended the All Candidates debate on Monday night for the Bay of Quinte riding. And the whole issue of the TMH came up. And two of the candidates said that they would very definitely work very closely, that the federal government, and the whole piece comes back to the federal government has a role in being a quarterback in our health care.
Mm-hmm. The accord, they have to bring that.
They have to bring down a strategy rather than having the whole thing executed piecemeal by province, because it doesn't work and our system is falling apart. So what we heard from the candidates was exactly that if you don't have a quarterback at the federal level, you're not going to get consistency and you're not going to get things done. And that's why everything stalls so badly. So from the two candidates that were there at that particular meeting, because TMH was brought up, there was definitely support that, you know, should their parties be elected, should they form mm-hmm. the government, that there will be that kind of dialogue. Because without the partnerships between the municipalities, the province, and the feds, it doesn't happen. It just
no, absolutely. Well, and of course, we've had a federal government for the last 9 years that, quite frankly, doesn't feel as though they have a role to play in health care. I mean, they say it's not our jurisdiction, it's not our responsibility, it's up to the provinces. But by withholding funding or not providing funding, maybe withholding is not the right word, but by not providing adequate funding at the provincial level, they've allowed, you know, problems to arise. We know that here, for instance, with Northumberland Hills Hospital. Mm-hmm. We know from the Hay Group that came in as the consultants brought in by our local Lynn, that hospital has done everything they possibly can to run as efficiently as they possibly can, and yet they don't have enough money in their budget to cover the core services that they have to provide. And so the real issue becomes, well, the province obviously isn't providing enough money. And then the issue becomes the federal government's not providing enough money. So it's all fine to say we need a good quarterback at the federal level, but if no one's willing to pick up the ball.
Exactly.
You know, it
well, I think what we need is and CARP advocates for this, is that you've got to have all the levels talking to each other so that they can develop a streamlined way of generating the services that's comprehensive, that is cost efficient, you know, patient from the hospital, through the hospital system, at home, and to get all of that lined up, give them drugs that are affordable, so that we have national pharmacare. And CARP does that from a national level, because you've got to sort of get all the parties that have the purse strings figuring out how this is going to work most effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when it's become an election issue for exactly that reason, because it's not working, because the flow isn't there.
Well, there's definitely been a breakdown. And I know that the health minister yesterday said on one of the panel discussions that they've been working for the last 18 months to work with the provinces to try and come up with a national buying strategy so they can get the best bang for their buck. But this is something they've only been working on for 18 months. Now, when the Liberals were last in power, they had negotiated an agreement with the provinces already on pharmacare strategy in order to come up with a funding model. And that was tossed out by the Conservatives the minute they were elected. So this has become a political hot potato issue. We're going to take another quick break, folks, our last of the hour. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with the Canadian Association of Retired Persons. If you have a question or comment, please feel free to give us a call. We only have about 10 minutes left at 905-372-2321. I'm Dave Glover. Stick around. And welcome back to The Drive Time, ladies and gentlemen. My guest in the studio, Rob Washburn, a professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. He's my regular contributor on Consider This Live, which is done every Wednesday night here at 6 o'clock. and Louise War, who is the vice chair of the Greater Bay of Quinte Association of CARP, and Mary Robertson is the chair. Welcome back to the show, folks. We got a few minutes here on the back end, and then we'll wrap her up. Rob, you wanted to kick us off.
Yes, I guess to finish, what advice would you give to seniors who are listening to us right now? What advice would you give them in terms of questions or issues that they should be talking to people, candidates, as they come up to their doorstep? What would you advise them? What are the things that they should be talking about, they should be asking?
You know, one thing about seniors, they're not afraid to talk. They're not afraid to ask, and they ask tremendous questions. The big advice I would say is to vote. Like, get out and vote. One of the things that there's a bit of a small groundswell about Fair Vote Canada, trying to change the electoral system in Canada from first past the post to either an alternate vote or proportional representation. Fair Vote Canada had put on a webinar free for CARP members just recently to talk about that because people don't understand it. I don't really understand it myself totally. But to get I would say to seniors that they need to get informed with all of the issues and find out what's really important to them and make their voice clear. On the CARP website, there's CARP eVoice, and you can actually drill down to the members of parliament or the MPPs. Their names are all there for your riding, and you can send a note right to them. All you do is type it in, push the button, and away it goes. So that's another way of getting your voice out there.
So, and I guess it's difficult for CARP because they're a nonpartisan organization. You can't really say, well, you know, are you better off now than you were 9 years ago or what? All of these other things. It really is a personal choice to the members, right?
And many of the candidates have said, you know, as I go door to door, this is what I'm hearing. And, you know, if that's the case and there is someone who comes up to their door, don't be afraid to say, I can't afford this. I can't get here. I need this. I need that. What are you going to do for me? And if it's transportation, if it's drugs,
housing, affordable housing,
You know, the gap between home care, talk about it. And don't be shy. Most seniors aren't shy. I mean, from what we saw in Peterborough,
definitely not shy.
Yeah, Northumberland, Peterborough, they're not shy.
No, mm-hmm.
They'll come up and they'll say exactly, and what are you going to do for me? CARP actually has a door hanger that they're going to send out, and that if somebody comes to your door, these are the things you want to ask about.
And what seniors can do, too, because there's a lower voter turnout for the younger generation, is to try and convince the younger generation to get out and vote and how important it is.
Is there a program within CARP then to connect seniors with younger people, sort of a mentoring or adopt a grandparent or something along those lines?
Or take a kid to vote
take
day.
Take a kid to vote day. Or something. Or maybe get the kid to drive you to the polling station.
That's probably more the point. It's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just thinking because I always harken back to when I grew up in Toronto. I went to the Wood Green Community Center when I was a kid, and there's a lot of community centers around us, but Wood Green ultimately evolved into a seniors' residence. It's actually a place where people live now, mm-hmm. and it was originally just a community center. And one of the big things they did there was connect young people with older people for two reasons. One, because there was a disconnect between the youth and seniors, but also to help seniors become more comfortable around young people, because there's always this inherent fear, at least among certain elders, seniors, Zoomers, whatever you want to call yourselves. And, I mean, the reality is if we can break down those walls and break down those barriers to communications, a lot of great things happen. That's what I saw firsthand at Wood Green anyway, and I know we've seen that around here with various organizations. Is that something CARP is actively involved in?
Yes, they do believe in intergenerational contact, for sure. And you can learn from each other. Every generation can learn from each other, for sure. Yeah.
Well, I want to do one last point.
Well, I was just going to say that I think that most of the people that we've been talking to that are sort of the younger group of the seniors are always engaged. And I was particularly struck by some of the young people that were coming out to the all candidates meetings that we had. Yep. And it was just a treat to see them. And it was just a thrill because, you know, we were so active politically when we were younger. Mm-hmm. It's kind of nice to see that the younger group now are. But I think they need to feel that there's somebody there that gets them.
Right.
And I think that's changing in this election, too.
And there's a reason to be active.
Yes.
Well, my guests have been Louise War. She is the vice chair of the Greater Bay of Quinte CARP. Canadian Association of Retired Persons, and Mary Robertson, who is the chair of the Bay of Quinte, the Greater Bay of Quinte CARP Association here locally. I want to thank you ladies for being in the studio. Still plenty of time left in the election. I know you're going to be busy working on behalf of that. Rob, always a pleasure to have you into the studio as well.
Thanks, Dave.
We're going to close the show with a classic David Bowie, and here is Golden Years right here on Northumberland 89.7. Thanks for tuning in.
Taking you nowhere.
Angel,
come little baby. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. Come little baby.
There's my baby lost, that's all.
Opening doors and pulling some